The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
It was 1 week ago that we began the recovery process from the deadliest mass shooting in American history. Stephen Paddock killed 58 people, injured hundreds more. The horror is equal only in how bizarre the investigation has been. Conspiracy theories now top off political posturing, making an already incredibly complex case even harder to make any sense of. Let's stay away from the politics and let's stay away from the conspiracy theories. First, the posturing. Just took a few hours for the calls for gun control to come trumpeting from the left. We also heard a few new words like bump stock. A bump stock is a device that turns a semi-automatic weapon into an automatic weapon without modifying the gun. People have been bump firing ever since semi-automatic rifles existed. It's a hillbilly machine gun. All it takes is a trigger finger and a belt loop. It's a firing technique that was created after automatic weapons ban of 1986. Bump stock attachments were born right after the ban. Gun attachments that provide a way to circumvent the law should be regulated. Whether you agree with it or not, there is a law against owning fully automatic weapons. Bump stock attachments should be regulated under the law. But the calls for a full-on ban is ridiculous for this reason. Tell me the last time a full-on ban of anything did anything. How is the ban on illicit drugs gone? How about the ban on guns in places like Washington, D.C.? After D.C. banned guns in 1976, homicides rose from 188 to 364 in just in 10 years. Now, that's because, well, you can buy those guns and bring them in, according to people like Michael Bloomberg. Well, not in Australia. That's a giant continent by itself. In Australia, guns were confiscated. No one can have a gun. Studies show that the gun ban had zero effect on gun-related homicide. Britain also has similar results. But there are people that don't want you to know those facts. Because it's easy to turn people against guns. Second, the failure to find any motive has made this shooting the most bizarre case I can remember. Paddock had more than 20 weapons in his room, and we've been shown zero footage of him carrying anything through the hotel? That's just flat out bizarre. Why? There have been multiple reports of possible accomplices, but we've not been shown a photo or video footage of him in the hotel lobby. A hotel casino has more cameras than a federal prison. The truth is this attack should be the most well-documented crime in history. But for some reason, we're not seeing the footage. And that just needs to be addressed, and the footage needs to be released. Because what's going to happen is more conspiracy theories are going to be coming out. This is enabling people from ISIS to Alex Jones to come up with their own claims for what drove Paddock to commit his crime. How do we not know what his motive was? How do we not know every single detail that happened, at least in the casino? Despite what we don't know, there is no question that this man was deeply disturbed. Since the early 90s, the number of people treated for depression has tripled in America. The number of people on antipsychotic medication is greater than that. A survey by the National Institute of Mental Health found that an astonishing 46% has at least one kind of mental illness. 46%. From 2000 to 2010, the suicide rate among Americans 35 to 64 increased 30%. For men in Stephen Paddock's age range, that number goes up by 50%. Out of every 100,000 men in the 50s and 60s, 30 will kill themselves. Guns are not the problem. We are. Something is wrong. And we know it because we see evidence of it everywhere. It's not the devices that we hold or the guns that we have or don't have. There's something wrong inside. We're experiencing a tidal wave of mental illness in this country. And we've got to get proactive in dealing with it. So what is it you can do? Well, how's your own family? I got up this morning and I saw a Facebook post from a friend of mine, Delilah, the radio show host. She posted on Saturday that her teenage son had committed suicide. He'd been struggling for a while. How's that long-lost friend of yours that you've been thinking about but hasn't called, and you haven't called them? How are your neighbors? Invite a coworker to lunch today. Talk to them. Because really, everything that ills our society is on us. And we're going to be the only ones that can fix it.
It's Monday, October 9th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So Harvey Weinstein is out of the Weinstein Company, and people on the right don't care about this story, but you should, because this is a very important story. This is the left finally going after their own. Harvey Weinstein is one of the is probably the biggest predator out there that we have seen. Next to who? Bill Cosby? Maybe Roger Ailes? But Roger Ailes doesn't seem to have the track record that Harvey Weinstein has. The stories that are coming out now about Harvey Weinstein, and stories coming from people like Ashley Judd. I mean, where have you been, Ashley? You're out speaking out about everything else. It's interesting that Ashley Judd came out against Donald Trump so hard and yet waited on Harvey Weinstein. The stories that are coming all involve him in a hotel room, in a restaurant, trapping some woman, asking some woman first for a massage, or to watch him bathe, or to watch him shower. Horrible story Megyn Kelly has on today on her TV show of this woman in Long Island who went to a restaurant and he closed the door behind them and made his advance on this woman, and she turned him down and he dropped his pants and took care of business while she stood there. Bizarre, awful, ugly. He has reached at least 8 settlements with women. This is going on from the 90s, from 1990, the first settlement. But if you look at the settlement, and the New York Times is kind of celebrating this, that you know, Roger Ailes' settlement were in the millions. The Harvey's was only $150,000 to $100,000. Well, yes, possibly because they knew nobody's going to believe you. Nobody's going to cover this. Where everybody, they knew everybody was out for Roger Ailes. So, of course, the New York Times would cover that. But did the New York Times cover all of the 8 settlements? And now the New York Times is saying that his were only $150,000. The women were abused twice. because of his power. Roger Ailes, there was pushback on. Harvey, there was none. And for anybody in the Weinstein group to say that they didn't know is absolutely ridiculous. How did you not know? Lisa Bloom, who was one of the people who took down Bill O'Reilly, she said, quote, "Harvey's just an old dinosaur learning new ways." No, I don't think so. Maybe walking down the hall and saying, which Bill O'Reilly claims he never said, "Hey, hot chocolate." Maybe that's an old dinosaur. But dropping your pants and masturbating in front of a woman in a restaurant, that's not an old dinosaur. That's a sexual predator. Why the look, Stu?
No, it's it definitely does not seem like old time thinking. I would say
no.
It's also very. I mean, I know this is aside from the story, but isn't it a really weird thing to do? I mean, outside of the fact that it's horrifically offensive and obviously a crime. But it's also just a very strange, like, you want someone to watch you bathe? I don't even like watching, walk in front of a mirror in the bathroom.
I know. And have you seen Harvey?
He's disgusting in every way. Yeah. Even his own descriptions of himself, as he was picking up the women, was calling himself
disgusting.
A fat, rich Jew, was his own description of himself. I mean, it is a weird story, and it's interesting. Because, I mean, I think there's going to be the argument, right, that these things... you know, Roger Ailes was seemingly getting away with this behavior for a long time before it came out. I mean, this stuff is,
because he had power.
Yeah.
And because nobody was willing to take Roger Ailes on because he was deadly. He was deadly.
Yeah.
He had a great PR strategy that allowed him to destroy anybody who was in his way. And so you didn't take him on. And honestly, that wouldn't have happened with Ailes if it wasn't for Megyn Kelly.
Yeah.
I really believe that Megyn Kelly was the one who had the chops to be able to finally say, yep, this happened to me. And everybody believed. Because she was at the top of her career. And look at how they're treating Megyn Kelly now. Here she, I mean, she's a hero. She's the one.
It should be to the left.
To the left. She's the one who took him down.
I mean, completely separate from her political viewpoints.
Yes.
Like, I mean, this is a... You know,
no, this goes
They always
beyond
say
politics.
This goes beyond politics, but does it for them? I don't think it
doesn't.
Does. Look, I mean,
doesn't.
Saturday Night Live doesn't even comment on this. There's no jokes.
They had the jokes.
Yeah, and
they shelved them.
Right, they shelved them. You know,
how do you shelve? How do the people at Saturday Night Live live with themselves? How do you think that you are not just a shill for somebody if you have all these jokes... And you pull them for what? For what? You're pulling them for Harvey Weinstein?
Their excuse was they didn't connect with the live audience, which is and some people who were in the audience differed with that analysis. Do you know Harvey Weinstein? I mean, I guess probably not every most people would just know that as maybe you know the company. Like, you're not like in he's an inside Hollywood figure at some level, which I understand, but I mean, this is too big of a deal. It's their world, you know. This is in their world. This guy had connections to all these people.
See, this is why I think that don't believe people who are actually decent, who aren't like this, because in their world almost everybody's like this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Almost everybody is like this. You talk to anybody from Hollywood and they'll tell you this is the normal story. So if you're surrounded in that world and this is your normal story, of course you think everybody's like that. The hypocrisy is remarkable. Now, the good news is that it is come out now. And so perhaps there will be, an equal cutting of the grass, and it will actually make a difference this time. Maybe this behavior will actually stop. If you take Harvey Weinstein down, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, they're saying, I mean, they're one of the, I think there was a woman who had the incident in, in the Italian restaurant with the potted plant that she had to endure said that basically there was no way to do this. Like, only very recently has this become a winning battle for these women. And if that's, you know, if that's the case, and I think that's great news, right? Like, you should be, if a predator like this should be able to be taken down if these things are real. And the thing about Weinstein, which is different than some of the other people who have been accused, is he doesn't seem to be all that, he's not too much into the denial aspect of it.
No,
he seems to be kind of admitting that he was doing these things.
Oh, yeah, and I can't believe that they're now saying, well, he's going to go through therapy and then he'll be able to come back. Excuse me?
These are crimes. That's not how we deal with crimes.
I mean, it's crazy. Right. They're just like, well, you know, he's an old dinosaur and he just needs some help and he's going to get some help and then he'll be back. Gosh, that's an awfully Christ-like attitude coming from the left. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, just accusations were enough to
drum you out of everything for all time. Just the accusation, mm-hmm. not the proof, just the accusation is enough to drive you out. He's allowed to get some therapy and then come on back? Unbelievable. Most Americans only have a couple of days of non-perishable food in their homes. If an emergency strikes, grocery store shelves are bare within a couple of hours, and relief sometimes takes a couple of days or maybe even a week to show up, if at all. There is a better way, and that is having food storage for emergency scenarios. It means you never have to deal with, you know, not having something to eat during a crisis. My Patriot Supply is the solution. I depend on them for my food storage, always have. I have it up at the house, and I have it at the ranch in case something, God forbid, happens. We're going to be able to take care of our family and hopefully be able to take care of some others as well in case there's a crisis just down the street. This week, you can get their new 102-serving survival food kit, a special price less than a dollar per serving. You can order today. That's breakfast, lunch, dinner, shipped free to your home. All you have to do is call 1-800-200-7163 or order online with preparewithglenn.com. That's dependable emergency food storage for less than a dollar per serving. The seasoned experts at My Patriot Supply have it for you. Go to preparewithglenn.com. That's preparewithglenn.com or 800-200-7163.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Some amazing audio coming your way. Also, we want to talk about how to reduce mass shooting deaths. Experts say these gun laws can help. Yeah.
How about making murder illegal? Oh, someone start with that.
Yeah,
I mean,
right?
This is the thing. They just continue to allow this to go on. And people aren't deterred because there's no price to pay for murder.
67% of the public say an assault weapons ban would be effective, and they would agree with it. A semi-automatic gun ban, 62%. Okay, you know what this is? This is somebody not understanding what a semi-automatic weapon is. Okay. If you would say, I don't want to have semi-automatic guns, then you have to go back to cowboy guns. You have to go back to a revolver. Okay? It's technology. It would be like saying, you don't need a laptop and an iPhone. Yeah, technology has changed. So it's just a new way of a gun. And it's been around since, you know, World War I. Semi-automatic guns are not new. They're not new. And if you don't have a semi-automatic gun, then you have to go back to a cowboy gun. And if you don't like the cowboy guns, well, you can go back to the flintlock. But those are the three choices: flintlock, cowboy gun, semi-automatic. It's only the matter of improvements in time. People don't understand that a semi-automatic gun is a normal gun.
Yeah, anyone who, because I think so many people don't come from that culture. You don't. There's a lot of people who never live in a house. I never did until my house that I live in
I
now
either.
That had guns. I mean, that's just not the culture I came from. And I think there's a really high percentage of people who live in, you know, the Northeast and in other areas where that's it's just not part of your life. You just think people when you think of a gun, that's a semi-automatic gun.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's a gun. That's a normal gun.
Normal gun.
It's a normal gun.
The typical gun you'd have.
Right. And everybody has made it into a horrible gun. It's a normal gun.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I can't think of a time in American history in the in my lifetime that it's been harder to find a man who will stand up for what is right, even against all odds, and stand up because it is right, even if it hurts him. I've never experienced a time in my life where it is more important to zoom out and look at the big principles as opposed to zooming in and seeing the daily squabbles. And that's what we want to do here in this segment.
Yeah, there's a new book called Scalia Speaks, Reflections on Law, Faith, and Life Well Lived. Antonin Scalia is certainly a guy that represents what you're talking about. And the book is by one of the co-editors is Ed Whalen. He's probably read his stuff online with National Review. And the book just came out, and Ed joins us now.
Hey, Ed, this is a collection of speeches. Some of them were unknown that he gave.
That's right, Glenn. Actually, almost all of them had never been published anywhere before. It's a real treasure trove of Justice Scalia's thoughts, not just on law, but on faith, on learning, on life. I think everyone will find it just a delight.
So Ed, could you find any place as you were looking at his speeches and you were looking at his life? Could you find any place to where you think he was deeply conflicted in the sense that he didn't want to make a decision or didn't want to do something, but because he believed in the Constitution, he did make that tough choice?
Well, he made quite clear that one example of that is on the matter of flag burning, that made the decisive vote back in the late 80s holding that laws that specifically target flag burning violate the First Amendment. He makes quite clear that if he had his way, you know, hippie flag burners would be tossed in jail. So that's just one example. Lots of areas of criminal procedure are another. And then even on the hot button issues that are so contested, it's important to recognize that his position was that these are matters left to the democratic processes to be decided one way or another. He did not, unlike folks on the left, misread the Constitution to impose his supposed views on, say, abortion and on marriage.
Did he ever? One of the things that is going around right now is this idea that our rights come from God and not the government. And it seems bizarre at how many people believe that somehow or another that rights don't come from God, that they do come from a man-made source. Did you find anything where he was talking about that?
Oh, absolutely. It recurs throughout his speeches, his recognition that our founding principles recognize that our rights come from God and that the Constitution sets up a structure that's designed to protect and fulfill those rights. Absolutely. That's at the very heart of his understanding of what America is. And I would just add that on this Columbus Day, you know, what better opportunity to highlight the first Italian-American justice, a justice who celebrated that one could both be Italian-American and be 100% American. It's a beautiful speech that he gave just a month after he got on the court, where he talks about what makes an American, and says no matter your blood, your place of birth, what makes it is embracing the principles of this country. And I'm afraid we see too many people abandoning those principles, and your example of believing that their rights are whatever government confers are just one example.
Yeah, I mean, Ed, it's amazing on Columbus Day today where they have security around the Columbus statue. It's now become some big controversy where Scalia in 2005 actually was able to become the Grand Marshal of the Columbus Day Parade, which was a really big deal to him, right?
It was a huge deal. He just delighted in it. He had marched in the parade when he was in the junior ROTC regiment at Xavier High School in Manhattan. And as he said, decades later, this is the top of the hill to be Grand Marshal in your hometown. For an Italian kid from Queens, there could be no greater thrill than to march one last time as Grand Marshal of the Columbus Day Parade. So he took great pride in being Italian-American. But again, he emphasized that he wasn't a partial American. He and other Italian-Americans could be fully American precisely because they embraced the American creed.
So as you look at today's landscape, do you see many people like him?
He is, in many respects, one of a kind. At the same time, he has a tremendous legacy in the law clerks, law students, lawyers he has influenced. So I think in the legal realm, we are very much living in a legal world that is defined around Justice Scalia. Many folks define themselves against him, but many others define themselves with him. And I think you see in Justice Gorsuch's selection and confirmation just one of the many great legacies of Justice Scalia. I think what you see from the book is Justice Scalia, the man in full, the man who was a man of deep faith, a man who recognized that the ultimate test of life is to live out one's faith properly. There's a beautiful speech called "The Christian as Cretan," meant ironically, that spells that out. But again, one of the key points he makes throughout the book in so many speeches is that his obligation as a faithful Catholic is to not misconstrue the Constitution and other laws to indulge his views. That his very obligation as a Catholic means that he shall not misread the Constitution. As he put it, the only commandment of his faith that really bore on his judging was, "Thou shalt not lie. Thou shalt not lie about the meaning of the Constitution or of other laws."
Ed, we're talking to Ed Whalen. He's the author of Scalia Speaks, Reflections on Law, Faith, and Life Well Lived. The book itself is really, as you kind of pointed out, his whole world, right? It's him as an individual, a person, his faith, his life, and the legal stuff. He entered into my thinking over the last week, however, as it relates to the tragedy in Las Vegas. And, you know, obviously the response to that has been largely, which ways will we further infringe our right to bear arms? And it feels like I was interested to see if you had perspective on what Scalia believed, not only on something like this, where you'd have, bump stocks, for example, to potentially be banned, but also the automatic weapons ban itself. What was his line when it came to where that right to bear arms stopped?
Well, we have his opinion in D.C. versus Heller, and I think it's far-fetched for someone on the other side to try to claim some sort of connection between this and the horrible incident last week. I think it's more relevant to recognize that Justice Scalia, drawing on the framers, saw that virtue in the citizenry was essential to the survival of this country. Mm-hmm. And when you have just a deep collapse in morals and respect for life, that's going to lead to some very bad things. Now, so I don't know what his particular views might have been on issues of gun policy or these bump stocks, whatever they're called. But the ruling in D.C. versus Heller was certainly much narrower. I think again, it's a this fellow who committed the massacre apparently violated gun law after gun law. So it would be non sequitur to suggest that the absence of gun laws was a problem.
Ed, how is Gorsuch going to? How's he fitting these shoes?
Well, Justice Gorsuch, made quite clear that he's dedicated to originalism. He's the first justice who was educated at law school in a time when Scalia had influenced what law is, what constitutional interpretation is. I think that's a significant fact. I am very hopeful that Justice Gorsuch will be a supremely fit successor to Justice Scalia. He's certainly done very well so far, and his record on the Tenth Circuit, I think, speaks very highly of his abilities.
Ed, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Ed Whalen, book is Scalia Speaks, Reflections of Law, Faith, and a Life Well Lived. That is available everywhere now. And he's also with the National Review and the Ethics and Public Policy Center.
Garbage in, garbage out. Make sure that everything that you're reading, everything that you're doing, you're putting in really good basic information and fuel into your mind. And this is a good place to start. So, the news lately. What you're not hearing lately is the good guy that uses a gun to protect his family from criminals. What you will hear is the good guy gets arrested. He's the one. The recent story of the USCCA member and Army veteran, Buddy Shepard. He had military background. He thought he was ready for anything. Three guys with a gun come into his house, put his family safety in jeopardy. And what does he do? He grabs his pistol and he confronts these guys. He holds them at bay. When the cops arrive, he was outnumbered 3-1, and he was the one arrested. He was charged with 3 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly firearm and tossed in a jail cell. The minimum sentence would have been 3 years in state prison. Hello? Because Buddy is a USCCA member, the moment they got his call, they jumped into action and they completely shielded him and his family from legal and financial ruin. Right now, the USCCA is on a mission to provide every responsible American with free training to make sure the good guys, people like you and me, don't go to jail for protecting your family and your loved ones. They have 164 pages. It comes out with bonus audio version so you can listen to it in your car. It's a life-changing guide on 100% free for a limited time. You'll also get a bonus home defense checklist. But the most important thing is you can become a member of the USCCA and you will be protected like Buddy was. I can't even, what would you even say to the police as they arrested you? Here's what you need to say. I'm a member of the USCCA. I want my phone call. ProtectAndDefend.com. Go there now. Instant access. ProtectAndDefend.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
It is, it's Columbus Day, and I don't know how I'm going to make it through with all this white power and white privilege. By the way, everybody on the ship except for Columbus, I believe, was a Spaniard. So we should hate Hispanics today for what Hispanics did, because Columbus got back onto the ship and went back to Spain. The guys he left, who were all Spaniards, they were the real villains. When he left, I think 34 of them behind. And they were with the, quote, very friendly Indians, as he called them. And he brought, I think, two Indians back to Spain to introduce them. And they all got along fine until Columbus came back and discovered that all 34 of the guys had been killed. Why? we'll tell you after the top of the hour.
Either way, happy Indigenous Peoples Day. I think we can all come together and celebrate Happy Indigenous Peoples Day.
Yes, yes. Okay.
Please don't.
Yes. So I just wanted to show you, if you happen to be listening, I just wanted to show you the difference between guns and what a semi-automatic is. And you need to show this to your friends. You need to talk to your friends about this. So this is a semi-automatic pistol. This is a pistol. This is what everybody thinks a pistol looks like. If it's not this, it's a six shooter. It's like a gun that John Wayne carried. All other guns look like this. This is what a semi-automatic is. The only reason why it is semi-automatic is because when it fires, it pulls this back, grabs another bullet, and puts it back in. So when you squeeze the trigger, you don't have to squeeze as far. That's it. However, this gun this gun has a what's called a New York trigger on it. So if you're carrying a cowboy gun and you only have six rounds in it, the problem is unless you cock the hammer back, you have to pull the trigger, and it takes about 12 pounds of pressure to pull that trigger back. That makes it hard to stay on target because it takes a lot of to pull it back. That's why people wanted a semi-automatic. You don't want to have all that pressure. The New York trigger now, because of New York, actually replaces that. So a semi-automatic is no big deal. It's the same, because you need the same amount of pressure to pull the hammer back. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, and it's such an odd thing that so many of these ways they're supposed to control gun violence are by making it more difficult to fire accurately, which is like when you have a gun, if guns are going to be legal, and we have a Second Amendment that says that they are, if they're going to be legal, shouldn't you want to hit the thing you're firing at instead of other things in the background?
So I have a Glock like this that's New York. Okay. And then I have one that I bought in Texas. We were out at the range last week and I said to Tanya, try this one. She had been firing mine. Accurate. Boom, 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 boom. Accurate every time. She pulls this one and her hands start to shake and she couldn't hit the target once. Now, what's better? What's better? Harder to pull trigger, which cannot go off accidentally. That's a complete fallacy. They don't just go off by themselves. So something that you're really trying to squeeze and it makes you less accurate,
right,
or something a little still won't go off, but something you have to pull and is not as hard, but you're accurate with it. The idea that these gun laws need to be changed is ridiculous, is absolutely ridiculous. And anyone who says you got to get rid of all semi-automatics, I want you to know that's all guns. You're going back to cowboy guns. You're going back to the Winchester rifle, the bolt action rifle, which, you know, my grandparents had. This is new technology. This is like, you don't need iOS 11. You're fine with iOS 2. You're fine with it. Just use iOS 2.
Glenn Beck. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Be consistent, tell the truth, and be authentic. That's all that Americans want from the media. Those three things. Surprisingly, last week, the New York Times delivered on that. They ran a bombshell feature story about Harvey Weinstein's long history of sexually harassing female employees, aspiring actresses, and just about anybody, including a plant at a restaurant. It's sick. You've probably seen his name about on 50% of the movies that you've watched in your lifetime. He is the movie producer behind Best Picture Oscar movies like Shakespeare in Love and The King's Speech. The New York Times reported that he paid off at least eight women to keep them from talking about his really super creepy, sleazy ways that he did business. Yesterday, last night, his company board of directors fired him. So kudos to the New York Times for running the story. Couldn't have been an easy decision. Weinstein moves in the same liberal elite circles as many of the other media honchos in New York City. He even hosted a fundraiser for Hillary Clinton in his home last year. She had turned her campaign into a referendum on Donald Trump's treatment of women. It must have been a little uncomfortable, even though she gladly accepted the campaign funds from the guy who was mistreating women for decades and everyone knew. You would think another New York media institution, Saturday Night Live, would have had a field day with this Saturday night, since they care so much about women's rights. And they hammered Donald Trump last year for that Access Hollywood tape, but instead, SNL decided to shelve all of the Weinstein jokes that they had prepared. Perhaps maybe it hit a little too close to home for somebody in Saturday Night Live. It couldn't have been NBC, because today Megyn Kelly had one of his accusers on her new show.
I know he called you the next day at your TV station. That was, didn't have your phone number. That's what you say. And how did that go?
That was so crazy, because the next day after I fled, basically, he called my station They said, I have Harvey Weinstein on the line for you. And my heart sank. And he said, I just want to let you know, I had a great time last night. Excuse me? Yeah, I had a great time last night. I'm going away overseas on a trip. I would love to see you again, if that's something we could do. I said, absolutely not. I told you yesterday, I have a very serious boyfriend. Absolutely not. And I'm pretty sure I just hung up the phone quickly after. It was a very short conversation, but that was the most shocking part.
Okay, so now here we find ourselves in a place that I hope we can find that sweet spot between a witch hunt and the truth as we move forward. But these things tend to move into the witch hunt quickly. Whatever the case is here, just know one thing. Last night, the Weinstein Company, the board of directors, did not fire him because they found out. They fired him because you found out.
It's Monday, October 9th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Joining us in studio, an author, radio host, commentator, extravaganza. It's an author of Martin Luther, The Man Who Rediscovered God and Changed the World, Eric Metaxas.
Good friend. I haven't seen you
been a while.
Since I think I left New York.
I think possibly.
How are you?
I may have seen you in Florida at some event. It is great to see you. I love you and admire you from a distance.
Well,
but
likewise.
Now from a very short distance. Yeah. Glenn, thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to see you. Your book, Bonhoeffer, it just changed me, fundamentally changed me. And you have made a career out of going in and highlighting these really amazing people that stood at critical times. You did Bonhoeffer, I'm trying to remember.
Wilberforce.
Wilberforce,
yeah.
And now Martin Luther.
Yep.
Martin Luther seems distant and dusty. Dust him off.
You obviously haven't read the book, Glenn.
I have not. I just got it today.
This book will blow the cobwebs off any dusty recollections you have. I have to say, in all seriousness, as it is with every one of the books I've written, it wasn't my idea. I kind of didn't want to write it. You know, Bonhoeffer, you know the story. Mm-hmm. Writing Bonhoeffer was tremendously painful and difficult for me. I had to switch publishers. It was an agony of my life. People think I'm exaggerating. It was hell. But God spoke to me and he said, I have my hand on this book. And he did. But I really wasn't gung-ho to write another biography, I'll be honest with you. But some friends, I dedicate the book to them, twisted my arm and kept saying, Eric, you wrote the Bonhoeffer book. You're the guy to write the Luther book because it's the 500th anniversary. And I actually thought, well, what 500th anniversary? I'm not, you know, paying attention.
Right.
And they explained to me 1517 is the moment when he nailed the 95 Theses to the door of the Wittenberg Castle Church. And that's where they trace the beginning of the Reformation, was this moment. Although, you know, talk about blowing the cobwebs off of things. We see that moment in retrospect as a heroic moment, right? He's thundering against the corrupt papacy by nailing this thing. And it's just the opposite. He was like tacking something up to a bulletin board. It was like a notice. Hey, you know what? I think we're going to have a little debate, a theological debate.
Really?
Oh, yeah. No, if you read that part in the book, you won't even believe what it really was. In fact, not only was he not tacking something up on a bulletin board, he may have given it to the church custodian to tack it up on the bulletin board. Or he may have done it himself and used paste and not a hammer. Like, we have this image of him.
So what happened? So how did that get...
All right. Basically, I mean, to focus on that, this seminal moment 500 years ago, he was somebody who had discovered some things theologically. But let's get it straight. He was a humble, obedient monk. This was not a firebrand or a rebel of any stripe whatsoever. This was a man devoted to God and devoted to the church. And he saw that what was going on with indulgences, by the way, he was a priest. So people would come to him in the confessional and say, hey, I got to get out of jail free card. Here you go. And he would look at this piece of paper that they had bought with their money, which they didn't have. And he would say, what kind of corruption? What kind of confusion? These people's souls are in danger. They think they can spend money and sin and pay for it. I mean, it had become very corrupt. But he didn't say, oh, well, I'm going to tear the church down. He thought to himself, it is my duty as a theologian, because he was not just a monk and a priest, but a fine theologian, one of the finest. He said, I need to bring this to the attention to the academic establishment, to other theologians, because if we don't begin to deal with this issue of indulgences, it's going to bring us down. This is one of the most terrible excesses that we've experienced. And so he said, let's have an academic debate. So in Latin, he prints up 95 statements, which when you wanted to have an academic disputation, that was kind of the way you did it. And you tacked it up someplace and people would say, oh, that's interesting. I'd like to participate. And you'd gather and have an academic debate, maybe in Latin, probably in Latin. And so he tacks this up, having no clue that in retrospect, it will look like, you know, Neil Armstrong planting the flag on the moon, Columbus planting the flag in the American soil. I mean, it's a moment in history that has grown out of all proportion, because in retrospect, we understand the significance of that moment led everything that followed.
That is bizarre, because it is, you do look at that as a moment of courage. When did the moment of courage hit him?
Well, I would say that there are, as with anybody of true courage and faith, there it's a continuum of courage. In other words, it's not like at mm-hmm. one moment he girds yes. his loins and says,
right.
I mean, he was a man who, what I talk about is that before this moment, when he had become a monk, for example, why did he become a monk? He became a monk because he took the idea of salvation and heaven and hell so seriously that he said, I need to devote my whole life to this. And this was against his father's wishes. His father had sent him to the finest schools, wanted him to become a lawyer. And just as he begins law school, it all kind of gets to him. This is in 1505. He's 22 years old, and he kind of realizes, I don't know where I'm going to spend eternity. Some lawyers had just died and had shared on their deathbeds that I wish I'd become a monk. Where am I going now? He was rattled. I think a lot of people were rattled, but he was a very intense, passionate person, brilliant. So he decides in a moment, that's its own story, that he's in the middle of a lightning storm and he fears for his life. And he blurts out to Saint Anne, who is the patron saint of miners. His father was in the mining business. He says, Saint Anne, if you save me, I'll become a monk. But it wasn't like he just blurted it out and hadn't been thinking about this. Let's mm-hmm. face it, he'd been thinking about this for years. So he becomes a monk and then devotes his life in the monastery to praying harder, to confessing more, to fasting more. He was skin and bones. I mean, the whole experience was, how do I earn my way to heaven?
He must have hated the popes.
Well, no, not until later. This is what's
Who was before Leo? Because Leo the 10th, right?
But
the one before him was also like
was it
nasty.
Sixtus? I forget.
Yeah.
Look, these dudes, they were, I mean, every educated, devoted Catholic is properly ashamed of this period
yeah.
of the papacy. It's like the church, I mean, since people know that I'm a very pro-Catholic, non-Catholic. I didn't write this book to bash the Catholic Church. But when you look at this history, you see what is the tendency. And this all goes back to what we believe about freedom mm-hmm. and the nature of man. What is the nature of any institution, the nature of power? It's to consolidate more power. How can I get more power? And the church had become, hugely powerful. So Luther, while he's a monk, he's not thinking about this. He is a devoted monk. He's thinking about his own salvation. All that other stuff comes later. But at this point, he's devoted to saving himself in a way, right? And a lot of people think that's what Christianity is. You save yourself, you work hard, you don't sin, you keep your nose clean, you don't screw it up and you might get into heaven. And so he is working the program, right, to use the 12 steps reference, harder than anyone who's ever lived, and he's becoming more miserable. He's not getting closer to God. And so he starts cracking up. Why, if I am doing everything right. He would confess. At one point, he confessed 6 hours straight. His father confessor, Staupitz, who's in the book, literally says to him at some point, enough, bring me adultery, bring me murder, otherwise get out,
right.
Leave me alone. You're torturing me. He would confess a moment of pride. I prayed so hard that I had a moment of pride, for having prayed so hard, and I have to confess my pride. I mean, he was driving everybody insane. So long story short, Luther kind of realizes this is not working. I'm not getting closer to God. Do I love God? No, I hate God. God is a judge who scares me, and I'm trying to jump through these hoops to please him. And his father confessor, Staupitz, says to him, you don't think that God loves you. You think that God hates you, but he loves you. I mean, it was this real conundrum. So Luther eventually realizes that nobody is studying the scriptures, because as you know, the printing press wasn't invented till very recently at that point. And so Luther does what no one else is doing. Almost no one else. He starts digging into the scriptures. And I think of it like a guy who has a disease, and he says, I have to find the cure to the disease. So I don't want food. I don't want phone calls. I'm just going to be looking into the scriptures because I'm trying to find the key to my problem. And so he effectively finds it around 1517. All these things coalesce, and he realizes, oh my goodness, it's kind of like somebody tells you that, you know, you're racing up a ladder and it's like the ladder's leaning against the wrong building. You can come down now. You've been wasting your time. He says, what I've been looking for is given to me freely by God as a gift of grace. The righteousness of God, which I was scared of, is God gives that to me as a loving gift. I don't need to do anything. He gave it to me. It's in an account in my name. All I have to do is go get it. But nobody told me that it was there. It's like, you want to talk about a mind blower? This blew the mind of Luther, but then this is kind of like the bomb that the explosion from this creates the future in which we live. Freedom. Everything that we take for granted in the modern world comes from that.
And we'll get into that here in a second.
He's at Eric Metaxas on Twitter and ericmetaxas.com. The book is Martin Luther, the man who rediscovered God and changed the world.
From October 1st, Business Insider, legendary investor Jim Rogers had this to say in regards to fear, gold, and the sector to be bullish on. Quote, everyone should have coins, physical coins, as an insurance policy, as an emergency, if nothing else. I hope you'll never need them, but you've got to start by owning gold coins, coins that are recognized all over the world. History has proven time and time again that gold is one of the best ways to hedge your portfolio. And unlike paper money, gold is a permanent store of value. These ICOs that are coming out, this digital money, you know, it could be good. It could also be horrendous, horrendous. What value does that have? That has less than even paper. At least paper, you know, currency is worth the paper it's printed on. The digital money isn't even worth that. Gold has withstood history and maintained its inherent value. It is durable. It is easy to transport and looks the same everywhere. Gold. Find out if gold or silver is right for you. It is for my family. 1-866-GOLDLINE. 1-866-GOLDLINE. Hear about their price guarantee and their specials this month. GOLDLINE. Read their important risk information. 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
I am so thrilled to have Eric Metaxas not only on the show, but in studio with us. He wrote a game-changing book for me called Bonhoeffer. If you haven't read that, you need to. And I just last week finished some books, and I thought, I am only going to start reading stuff that will fill me up with good, solid, rock-solid information. So this couldn't come at a better time for me. Martin Luther is his latest book, The Man Who Rediscovered God and Changed the World. So tell me how he's relatable today.
This is the funny thing. I mean, I take kind of a perverse pride in going into these book projects pretty darn ignorant. Mm-hmm. And I have friends, the guys I dedicated the book to, Marcus Speaker, and my buddy Greg Thornbury, the president of the King's College in New York City, was explaining to me, because he's a theologian, mm-hmm. why I need to write the book, because Luther is significant in all these ways. And the more I went into it, the more I thought, how do we not all know this? And it happens with every one of these books I read. How did I not know this? And Luther, what he did exactly 500 years ago, opened the door to the future. I titled the epilogue, where I kind of explain all this in the book, The Man Who Discovered the Future, because this seminal moment, after 15 years of neglect, in a way, you could say, that the tradition, the accretions of tradition and so on and so forth had obscured this central issue, which is called the gospel, the free gift of Jesus, which makes us all be able to have a direct relationship mm-hmm. to God. It doesn't need to be through an institution mm-hmm. or whatever. It's exactly what Whitfield was preaching, 200 years later, which created America. Without that, you don't have anything like freedom, the freedom of the individual to stand against the state.
Well, it's crazy. Here. Last week or 2 weeks ago, we had two people in the media, one Meet the Press, another one on NBC, that said that, your rights don't come from God. It's direct.
Somebody interviewed me recently about what Margaret Feinstein said and whatever. I mean, things are so bad that our leaders in the Senate, on the Senate level, do not understand the basics. It's like trying to write a book and you don't know the alphabet. They mm-hmm. don't understand the concept of what freedom is, where it comes from, that it comes from God, that at the heart of freedom is religious liberty, is this idea that I can think any dumb thought I want and it's protected. God says you have the right to think your own thoughts. It's so fundamental, but as you know, for 40 or so years, we've not been teaching this in the schools, so that even our elite journalists and our senators don't understand the building blocks of how we have everything that we have. And this issue of having a direct relationship to God, being all equal before God. I mean, when Whitfield preached this throughout the 18th century, up and down the 13 colonies, it was a revolution. People thought, really? You mean... If the minister is preaching something that's not right, I have the right to go to another church or to object? Or if the magistrate or the governor or the king is behaving in a way that's not right according to God, I have the right to protest or something? This was an earth-shattering thing, and it began for sure with Luther. And as we know, freedom comes with a price, right? Freedom mm-hmm. is not always good in the sense that you are now free to do the wrong thing, mm-hmm. okay? You're free to start a crazy church. You're free to start the Church of Scientology, right. Not just a good Protestant church. You're free to start loony stuff and cults.
I have 30 seconds.
That's the price of freedom. But which of us would trade that freedom for the slavery of being under an institution that's going to tell you the meaning of truth and you cannot dissent?
I think more and more people are getting to that point to where they're willing to do that. They're willing to trade but they take their freedoms so for granted. They don't even really understand it. They won't until they lose it. The name of the book is Martin Luther, the man who rediscovered God and changed the world. Eric Metaxas, the best-selling author of Bonhoeffer. Always good to have you in, Eric.
My joy. Thanks, Glenn.
God bless.
Appreciate it.
Glenn Beck. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Well, Pat Gray is with us. Happy Indigenous Peoples Day, Pat.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's a beautiful day.
It's a beautiful day.
Beautiful day.
And I know that you went out and you celebrated Indigenous Peoples Day this weekend.
Well, we had a huge weekend in preparation for Indigenous Peoples Day.
Yeah. What did you?
We went to San Antonio, but on the way we stopped off at Waco at Chip and Joanna's Fixer Upper Place.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Have you guys been to the Silos?
I have. Yes.
I have not.
You haven't been?
No. So, my wife has been, and she raves about it. And
yeah. It's pretty awesome. I mean, she had quite a vision. And there are literally hundreds of people on the premises.
It's incredible.
Hundreds. Yeah. It's a fixer-upper show. They sell knickknacks. Why are you people here?
And they're really
cheap. We were there too.
You so like them.
You
so
like
much.
Them a lot. You like and that's them what Jackie so much. Kept saying. It's them. It's not the show.
Yeah, it is.
And I know it is, but it's an amazing situation they've created there. They have the business in the Silos and the bakery. And then on the side, they put out this AstroTurf where the kids can play soccer and football.
Well, and more importantly, it's surrounded by food trucks. Yes. That's
completely
that's
surround the place. Yeah. And so they've created more business for the businesses in the city. And they created this trolley run from downtown to their business that's free. And so, I mean, I don't know how many businesses have spun off theirs, but it's pretty outrageous.
The town must be freaked that they've said this is the last season.
Have to be.
Well, can you imagine the factories for facial cream that are going to be popping up?
Well, and that's the thing. Yeah. Before we left, we had to buy some of her facial cream.
Yeah, the facial cream, it did not happen. I don't know if you know that, but it didn't happen.
We did go to the bakery. It was probably an hour and 15 minutes waiting in line, because the line stretches through the store, out the door, around the store, down the block. And
shut up.
It's incredible.
I want to.
It's good. You know, they're good baked items.
Yeah, the stuff I had was really
should
good.
Be.
Yeah.
Yes, it should.
I mean, if it's an hour and a half to wait to get stupid cookie.
I know. It's like I've been in shorter lines at Disney World, and there was no ride once I got inside, except from the frosting on the cake. I think that took me on a buzz for a while, but it's astounding what they've created there. It's really astounding. It reminded me. I told Jackie this reminds me of what Glenn was thinking for.
The independence. Yeah.
That's kind of what they're doing.
Yeah. And what's really amazing is they took a town that you used to say Waco.
Branch Davidians.
Yeah. You only think of the Branch Davidians. Now it's Chip and Joanna. I mean,
yes, they completely repositioned
the entire town.
Yeah.
And now you hear people all the time say, I remember when we moved down here, people were like, you should move to Waco. I'm not moving to Waco. What are you, crazy?
Yeah.
You know, that's and remember, we talked about it at some point. About it and said, can you imagine if we would move our studios to Waco, what people would say?
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
And now here, Chip and Joanna.
And they fixed it. I mean, Fixer Upper applies to the whole city of Waco. They have fixed it. Mm. They really have.
Is there more to do in Waco than just Chip and Joanna?
Yeah. No. There's a Dr. Pepper museum.
Okay.
That I went to.
Well, Stu has a little more knowledge on that.
I did. I spent the whole day.
We missed the Dr. Pepper museum.
Oh, yeah. No, it was very cool. They had a Dr. Pepper. And that's where I went in, and they have whoever the Dr. Pepper guy was.
Dr. Pepper.
It's not. No, his name is not actually Dr. Pepper. It's something else. But the guy who started the museum was like a huge like free market guy. And they have a whole section of the museum called like the free market center at the top of the museum. It's actually pretty cool.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of shops and stuff around there that have popped up. Some
and
of them.
And Baylor's there.
Waco.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's definitely stuff there.
Yeah.
But I mean, soda and baked goods are the main
attraction. Yeah, it's mostly Chip and Joanna. Mm-hmm. It's their town now. They should rename it Chip and Joannaville.
So innovative name, Chip and Joannaville.
What their life is like in a town that small?
It's not that small, though, really. I mean, it's
200, maybe 1,000 in the metro area.
But it's still a pretty small town to be that huge.
Yeah.
With the thousands, maybe hundreds, I would say between 500 and 1,000 people were there on the premises. If they showed up, I mean, it would be, I don't think they can. I don't think they can go into their own store. I don't know how they would. It would be bedlam.
What you need to do is leak. Get in line at the bakery and then leak that they showed up on the other side of the premises.
Hey, they're over there.
Go see them. Oh my God, it's Chip and Joanna. They're here.
And then you get all the cookies you want.
She's got her face cream right now. She's selling it right now in the parking lot.
So today, it is Indigenous Peoples Day, of course.
Always known as Columbus Day.
Columbus Day. Mm-hmm. Pat Gray Unleashed is coming up on the Blaze Radio TV networks with David Barton today. Kind of going through the truth here.
I just want to find the truth. I just want the truth. If Christopher Columbus was, in fact, a genocidal maniac, let's get it out there. Let's go ahead and talk about it.
He is deeply conflicted. He is deeply conflicted. There is a great book called The Light and the Glory. Have you ever read this?
I haven't.
Oh, you should. Written by Peter Marshall. He was a professor of something at Yale, and he wrote this is the history of the founding of America, and he starts with Columbus, and the story of Columbus, it is so well written. It is, I mean, it's written like a thriller, and the story of Columbus, of the first three chapters in it, and he goes from a good guy to a bad guy. I mean, there's times where he is really a good guy who's on a quest for, you know, for Christ, and is humble.
That's
and he,
absolutely how he started.
Yeah. And then he keeps getting sucked into the gold madness. And, you know, I know, Pat, you and I both believe that this land is sacred, mm-hmm. and it was preserved for this time and for these rites to come forth. And every time somebody is on, you know, gold fever, they never get here or they're destroyed. And he was destroyed in the end. And it's because God keeps trying to pull him back on track, and he keeps going off.
His thing, though, was, and I don't know how much it stayed that way, but his thing was, he's going to bring back riches for the glory of God. He intended...
He was trying to find Solomon's gold. He was trying to find Solomon's mines, okay? And what he was going to do is bring it back so then Queen Isabella and Ferdinand could then go take those riches and rebuild Solomon's temple. Mm-hmm. That's what he was going to do. Mm-hmm. So the gift for God was, go find the gold to bring it back to rebuild the temple and mm-hmm. be the reason the temple was rebuilt.
But none of that is discussed anymore. And these kids who go through college, the first day of my 17-year-old daughter's college experience, she came home and said, "Dad, my teacher taught me that Christopher Columbus is a genocidal rapist murderer who started the Western slave trade." I'm like,
well, at least you made it through a couple hours.
In some ways, some of that is true.
Not really, though. He had to respond to the murder of his men.
Okay.
His crew was killed, and then he got a little pissed.
Yeah. So hang on. So he leaves. He leaves the 38 men behind. And he leaves. He comes back like a year or so later, and they're all dead. And they say, through the translators that he had with him, they say, well, they were raping and pillaging. They wouldn't take no for an answer on the gold. And they just started having their way with any of the women that they wanted. And so we had to kill them all. And so the trouble starts there. And he had nothing to do with that. But then he had to decide, right, who do I believe?
Yes.
And that's where the trouble, yes, that's where the trouble started.
Plus, I mean, these tribes, one of the tribes he was very close to.
Yes.
Got along with really well.
Really well.
The cannibal tribe, not so much. They seem to have somewhat of a conflict because he had flesh and they wanted to eat it.
That's
where there was a little bit of a dichotomy and a little separation between
the
tribes.
Well, there's sometimes so, when they're hungry, you might have a disagreement with the cannibal
tribe.
They
were looking at him like he was a steak. And so... Yeah. Yeah, he eventually had to wipe them out. I mean, I don't know if he had to, but he did.
Yeah.
He wiped them out.
The population was 300,000. He reduced it by 100,000 in the end.
But that's not genocide, still were
people. No, it is genocide. I actually heard a guy talking about Indigenous Peoples Day legitimately. They're changing this in cities from Columbus Day.
They've already done it in Los Angeles. Indigenous
Peoples.
And
I think it was the guy in Los Angeles talking about this, and he said... Mm. Columbus was responsible for the worst genocide in world history.
Oh my gosh.
Now, I mean, 60 million people died in communist China.
Right.
I mean, the Nazis, you got Pol Pot, you got
Stalin,
you got Rwanda.
What kills me too is that they make this about a white guy. Even if you're right about Columbus, it was his Hispanic crew that did it all.
Yes.
He left. Yeah. He left as friends. He comes back and it's the Spaniards. Yeah, that were killing. So it wasn't the white man that did it. It wasn't the guy from Italy. He was fine with them. He had a good time. He went home. It was the Hispanics that did it. So
typical. He's going to the racism again, Pat. You seen this?
No, but I just want to point out. Let's be
unbelievable.
Let's be honest about it.
Yeah.
Are you amazed by what you're seeing, though, on, you know, Twitter and all this stuff?
I just can't even, I can't believe it. It is, the Q Allen writes, "In honor of Columbus Day, take this tweet, put your own name on it, then erase mine." The next tweet, "You've got to hand it to Christopher Columbus because he would have definitely taken it anyway and then murdered you. Me, this is mine. I discovered it. Them, what? No. Me, stab them. Columbus Day rules. Cop, dang, he's right. I mean,
incredible.
Happy this dude came over and pointed out what was already here day. As a man, I honor Christopher Columbus every day of the year by refusing to ask for directions. In 1492, Columbus was a genocidal piece of ass and an a-hole, too. I mean, it just doesn't... The only decent thing in the whole tweet storm is the only thing Christopher Columbus ever discovered was Daniel Radcliffe. See, that's the director.
So here's the...
Similar name.
Here's the question that everybody has to ask themselves. Would you have been any different?
Yes. I would have done everything perfectly. I don't know about you guys, but yeah, I would have actually nailed it.
You're in front of the king and queen, and they say, you know, 10% of all the riches are all yours. You go out, you're on a ship, you're full of a ship of sailors who want to kill you, by the way. They want to kill you. I don't know if you know this, but the sailors back then are not like the U.S. Navy. So they all want to kill you. You've only kept them together because you've promised them the riches when they get to the land.
Right.
You get to the land. You are friendly with everybody. You turn around. They kill everybody. They start to kill everybody. They end up being dead themselves. You come back. There's all kinds of gold there. Everybody has filled your head with you're the greatest guy ever. You're going to change the entire world. You're doing it for God. Nobody is a no man to you. Everyone is your yes man because you are now the most powerful person on the planet.
Donald Trump to the 100th power.
You really think you're going to have the strength to be the one guy with all the sailors who just want the gold, the riches, and the raping? You're going to be the one guy all by yourself going, now, wait a minute, guys. Hold on just a second. I don't think so.
No, I most certainly would have been that guy, but not Glenn, apparently. The book he was just talking about is The Light and the Glory. A bunch of people have been asking about it.
It's a great book. Great book.
In fact, to the point you were just making, one of the titles of the chapters, Damn Your Souls, Make Tobacco. it's a great title. By the way, if you open up this book you were talking about with this history, in there you see in the acknowledgments, the authors wish to express their gratitude to David Barton and Wall Builders.
Wow.
So of their capable research assistance of his staff. David's going to be joining Pat Gray here in just a moment.
And we've had him on before. Marshall before. He's great author. Yale, something or other, professor or something at Yale. Protecting your family is number one responsibility. SimpliSafe Home Security is a great way to protect your family. I have met SimpliSafe's founder. He is mechanically minded and a math kind of guy. Years back, he was at Harvard in grad school when his friends got robbed in Boston. They came to him and said, we can't buy a security system. They have to be hardwired. We don't own our houses. There's a 3-year contract. We're not going to be here for 3 years. We're going to school, and they're extremely expensive. So he's a problem solver. He's an American tinkerer. And he said, I'll come up with something. He invented SimpliSafe. Now SimpliSafe is commercial. It's totally wireless security system. Top shelf, complete security, 24/7 alarm monitoring, police dispatch. Everything that he wanted to do for his friends when he was in college can now be done for you. No contracts, no hidden fees. It is simple. SimpliSafe. Popularity soared back at Harvard when he first brought this out. Everybody started to buy him up. And now the same is happening all around the country. They're protecting 2 million homes now. SimpliSafeBeck.com. Make your home simply safe. Get a 10% discount today if you order today. If you want your security system, you know, up running tonight, you can go to your local Best Buy and you can have it protected by tonight. But otherwise, you can go to the website and read all about it and order it online. You will save 10% online if you go to SimpliSafeBeck.com. That's SimpliSafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So a few things that we have not had a chance to talk about. One is this event that happened in a bakery up in Seattle last weekend. We have to get somebody on from the Liberty Council or someplace to find out, can these Christians sue the gay bakery for kicking them out? They should be able to. Hopefully, they would lose that lawsuit. Because then it would make it okay, right, to own your own store conscience. And be able to say, I don't want these people here.
Your own artistic performance you're allowed to own. I think that's...
I mean, it's pretty remarkable. Pretty remarkable.
I noticed, too, you've pretty much... You know, put the kibosh on the truth as usual. Is what you're doing here?
What truth?
Well, the truth about the shooting in Vegas, that it had to do a lot with O.J. Simpson, and Alex Jones uncovered it, and you won't play the audio. I want people to know I've been trying all day.
I want the O.J. Simpson theory tomorrow.
Glenn Beck. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
New York City, the police are on high alert today. They have strict orders to keep 24/7 surveillance in Midtown Manhattan. They say an attack today is likely. The target, the 70-foot statue of Christopher Columbus. It's Columbus Day. So instead of using their resources to protect the citizens, the NYPD are forced to guard a hunk of stone from potential vandals because it's Columbus Day. I'm sorry, Indigenous Peoples Day, as some groups like Antifa have rebranded it. Antifa has big plans in your town if you have a statue of Columbus. Antifa is calling for collectives all over the country to take action against the most vile holiday of the year, Columbus Day, by, quote, decorating neighborhoods. They say put up a mural or poster or banners. I'm sure the poster or banners that you would get at Party City is exactly what Antifa is thinking about. Did we not learn anything from Charlottesville? Have we forgotten about Heather Heyer so fast? Italian and Americans legitimately celebrate Columbus Day. Isn't it a little culturally insensitive to ruin this day for them? Who is Antifa to destroy a day that is so important to the Italian immigrants who helped build this country? Now, here's the real point. You want to protest an inanimate object? It's your right. It's my right to call you stupid every day. I mean, how does an inanimate object, how does a statue affect your life, really? It's not your right to lead to violence over a statue. Not to mention, it accomplishes nothing. Defacing a symbol is just that, symbolic. You can't tear down the past. What we have to realize is history is messy. Columbus was amazing in many ways, but he also wasn't a saint, far from it. He cared more in the end about gold than the New World. And he treated the natives of the Caribbean horribly. But he will forever be a part of our past. So we can either learn from that, the good and the bad, or we can fail and make the same mistakes over and over again. On Columbus Day, let's celebrate the fact that our history is transparent for everyone who truly wants to see the whole picture. It's available. It's complicated. It's raw. It's unedited. And that's exactly the way history should remain.
It's Monday, October 9th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Nothing went right for Christopher Columbus. He had been rejected by every king. He had gone to the king and queen of Spain before they rejected him. They found him arrogant, as did all of the other kings. He went to the King of England, dejected. That king found him arrogant and foolish. All the kings passed. He went back to the King and Queen of Spain and asked them again. And they said no. They were busy with the Moors.
They were trying to drive the Muslims out of Christian Spain. They said no, and dejected, Christopher Columbus went back to a monastery where he had good friends, monks. And he had taken out holy orders as part of the Order of St. Francis. He was trying to be a more peaceful man, like Pope Francis is now, also Order of St. Francis. But he was a complicated man. He would go between wanting to serve God and wanting the glories of the earth. And he could never hold it. Finally, the king and queen relented when the head of the monastery that he went to went to the queen and said, look, I know him and I know he's been arrogant, but he is a changed man. And all he wants is the glory for God. He doesn't want the glory himself. He wants the glory for God. And the king and queen decided that they had just finished conquering the Moors, that the way to thank God, better than building a church to thank them for that success, better than doing anything else, they thought, why not go over, and if there are indigenous people that they can bring the light of Christ to, they should go and do that. And that would be the thanks to God for their victory over the Moors. So he gets his three ships, but they're kind of crappy ships. And the reason why they're crappy is because all the evil Jews have the ships. Why do the Jews have the ships? Because the Jews were being run out of Spain at the time. 1492, the Inquisition is starting to really heat up. And all the Jews are starting to flee. The smart Jews flee. It's another Holocaust for them. So he's going through the harbor, and he's on one of the only large ships, the three of them, the only large ships that really aren't carrying Jews to another land. And he gets out, and things are going horribly. He's out in the middle of the sea, three quarters of the way across. The ships all of a sudden lose all their steam. There's no wind, nothing. The heat was so unbearable, none of the crew members even want to go below deck. The wheat was scorched. The salt meat went rotten. They listened to the sound of water and wine casks busting. No wind. This is when the crew of the other two ships start to go a little wild. And they say they're going to kill Columbus because they're all going to die. Nobody had ever gone this far before. They're all going to die. They're going to die out in the middle of the ocean, or they're going to fall off the edge of the earth. Columbus had been made fun of, you know. Oh, here comes the guy who thinks the earth is round. And he was determined to go. But if you read his diary all the way through, it's for the glory of God. He had mastered it. Right when he was told that he could have his ships for the glory of God, he changed. And he said, okay, well, I need to be the governor of the new land, and I need 10% of all the gold and the silver and anything that we find. And the king and the queen kicked him out. He went back to the monastery. In the monastery, the monk looked at him and said, what is wrong with you, dude? What is wrong with you? I thought this was about God. Okay, you're right. So he goes. And in his journal, he's talking about God the whole time. And the crew starts to turn on him. And he makes a deal. He says, okay, here's the deal. 3 days. Give me three more days. And he prays like he's never prayed before. And on October 9th, the morning of the third day, he sees land. Terra! Terra! They start shouting. His journal is remarkable when you read what he says about the natives, the Indians. He says that they, you know, obviously they don't understand each other's language, but they begin to communicate and they are delightful people. They bring them in, they feed them, they welcome them. He dedicates the land to God. He's immediately the Spaniards on board. They immediately start looking for gold. Columbus is starting to be bitten by the fever just a little bit, but he's taken by the natives and thinks they're wonderful. He goes down and he gets back on the ship and they finally make it to Cuba. And they're on Cuba and he decides to leave the crew, about 38 men there, and go back with two of the natives back to the king and queen to show them what they have found. They found some gold. He leaves the 38 men there. He goes back. On the way back, because he's so focused on the gold, they almost don't make it. The storms rage. He decides to take beans out, and he puts a cross on one bean and puts them into a hat, and everybody on the ship has to draw a bean. The one who draws the bean has to go make a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. And they're asking God, please, we'll humble ourselves and we'll go make a pilgrimage to the Holy Land if you will calm the seas. He pulls out the last bean and it's the one with the cross. He, instead of being humbled, he holds it up and says, look at the Lord has chosen me yet again, and becomes more arrogant. The storms rage even higher. They put more beans in. He pulls it out again. Look what the Lord has done. He's not humbled. He makes it back to shore. He makes his pilgrimage. When he comes back, all of the guys that he left behind were dead. Why? The natives killed them all, because as soon as he left, according to the natives, they began to rape and pillage and have their way with all of their women. And so they were killed pretty quickly. Columbus never found his way to America. He was 90 miles away. But I believe this land was not made for people who were looking for gold. That's why Jamestown ended in cannibalism, I believe. Whenever you came to this shore looking for gold, the Lord turned you away. In the end, because of Columbus, about 100,000 of the 300,000 natives died and were killed. They were friends for a while, and gold fever took over. My question to you is twofold. Do you believe that somebody could try to do something grand for the glory of God? I do. I believe that Columbus came over here for the glory of God. I believe he had a righteous idea. I believe our pilgrims did the same. I also believe that God turns away those on this land who were hungry for gold. And he'll do it again in the future, those who are hungry for riches and don't care about him. The second thing is, do you really think you're that much better than Columbus? Do you really think that put in his shoes at his time, in his place, coming over here, finding the gold, being the most celebrated, from the most ridiculed man to the most celebrated man, where everyone is wanting to throw the gold and the silver at your feet, wanting you to be the governor, wanting you to be Christopher Columbus. Do you really think you're stronger than he was? Do you really think that there aren't people that you know in your life put into that same exact situation at that time would have been the great peacemaker and would have been the only guy on the ship saying, no, 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 boys, no, no, now we're not here for the gold. We're here for the glory of God. Tell me the person in your life that could have conquered the sailors alone on that ship.
Coming up today on the Blaze TV and radio networks, I'm Pat Gray Unleashed. He's going to have David Barton on talking about this and really diving into Columbus.
He's
and
good
history.
At that.
Oh, yeah.
There's also a great book. It's called The Light and the Glory by Peter Marshall and David Manuel. It is a fantastic book. I pulled it out of the library yesterday to read up again on Columbus. And it tells the story. I mean, the whole bloody story, but also the good part. I mean, we have to understand that history has two sides, both the light and the dark, and both sides need to be told. Columbus wasn't a great guy, but he also was amazing in other parts of his life. History's complicated and ugly. Let's learn all of it. Do you know somebody who is obsessed with fall? I know that my wife and children who grew up around the foliage up in New England, they just do not like Texas at this time of year because they like the fall foliage, the colors and the smells and the pumpkins and all of that. ProFlowers has the perfect gift for the lover of fall, a long-lasting bouquet in the favorite fall colors. Best-selling cinnamon cider roses are now a great option for a birthday, anniversary, or just for somebody who is missing the fall colors. Go with one of the classics like 100 autumn blooms or a dozen autumn roses, and you can't lose because no matter which bouquet you send, you're going to receive 20% off of any ProFlowers unique bouquet of $29 or more. ProFlowers. The bouquets are guaranteed to stay fresh for at least 7 days or your money back, and you control the delivery date. ProFlowers. They give you more bloom for the buck, big, beautiful flowers, more stems for your money, and long-lasting freshness. It's 20% off of all bouquets of $29 or more. Go to ProFlowers.com. Use the promo code Glenn at checkout. That's ProFlowers.com. Promo code Glenn.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
I was up in Idaho for vacation, and I gave a speech on our principles and our united future, and it was really interesting to see. You know, I talked a little bit about the. Talked a little bit about the Constitution, which was a little intimidating because I had a federal judge sitting in the front row. But talked a little bit about the Constitution and how we got here, and what are we fighting over? Or are we fighting over equal stuff? Or are we fighting over principles? And we're not fighting over principles at all. And you know that. Because nothing is consistent. Look at the Harvey Weinstein thing. Look at the Harvey Weinstein thing. These guys have known this predator has been around for decades. For decades. And they all went crazy about Donald Trump. Well, you went crazy about Donald Trump. How come you weren't crazy about Harvey Weinstein? Because he seems like he's much worse than Donald Trump ever was. Where were they on Harvey Weinstein? And if you defended Donald Trump, how do you have anything to say about Harvey Weinstein?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough on that one, in that most of the stuff that happened with the accusations on Trump happened after he was a presidential candidate. A lot of those women came out after that. And I feel like there's a standard of, we all just assume a big presidential candidate is going to be accused of a million different things. Yes. But it's part of the reason, honestly, I haven't believed some of the Clinton accusers over the years. It's just, you just kind of have that generalized belief that when you're a big figure
yes.
in politics, you're going to get accusations like this, whether they're true or not. The thing with Weinstein is, like, there's no motivation. These are Hollywood people. They're, you know, this is a, he's a big guy making them all rich and pushing liberal causes. There's no reason Ashley Judd's going to come out to bash him yeah. unless it happens, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the standard we're all operating under. However, there's been no trial. There's been no trial in any of these cases. I mean, you know, there's been accusations, there's been settlements, there's been lawsuits, there's been admissions of inappropriate behavior. But we have really entered this world in which a group of accusations is just guilt. And I think in this case, again, I am totally guilty of this process where I think he's guilty because a bunch of people have accused him. That's not the right legal standard, though.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Now, here's the big news.
Could there have been any law passed that would have stopped him?
No. He passed background checks, registering for handguns and other weapons on multiple occasions.
That's the senator from California on Face the Nation. The Declaration of Independence, the opening paragraph is game-changing. And we have read them so many times, and now they've just fallen into dusty words that nobody even thinks about. But we've said them in my generation so many times that you don't even really think about them anymore. I want you to think about them as if you've never heard them before. We hold these truths to be self-evident. Think of just that line. If I said to you, all of us got together, and we find these truths to be, and nobody even has to teach them. We just all know them to be true. Could you even decide on what those were? Could we as a people today decide what's true and what's not? And so true that you wouldn't even have to teach it. What would it be? The sun will come up tomorrow? We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. They didn't mean to exclude women. What they meant was man. All men. Everyone is created equal. That today is still a remarkable phrase. There are people today that still don't believe that. Kim Jong-un. People in Iran, ISIS, Saudi Arabia. That all men are created equal. And they're endowed by their creator. Wait, what? They're given something from God. All men, everyone. And there's certain unalienable or inalienable rights, meaning they can't be changed. No man can change them. No man can take them away. You can't change them. No matter what you do, those are always there. So we find these sets of truths to be self-explanatory. That there is a God, And he's done something to men. He's created them all equal, and he's given them something that nobody can ever change or take away. And among these are life, liberty, and property. Why didn't I say pursuit of happiness? Well, because the slave owner, Thomas Jefferson, that you read so many terrible things about, that slave owner knew that if you put property in there, seeing that this was the founding document of the United States of America, that the slave owners would then say, well, it says property right here in our founding document, and slaves are my property. And so we have had the discussion of anything from taxes to socialism because Thomas Jefferson refused to give this chit to the slave owners. Life, liberty, and property. And that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Wait a minute. What? I thought the government was here to build schools. I thought the government was supposed to build roads. No, the government is supposed to keep us safe. They're supposed to build an army. No. The government is established to secure these rights. And among these rights are life, liberty, and property. That's it. That's what they're for. They may need an army to do that, because somebody else from a foreign land may come and try to take our stuff away. But that's what they're instituted among men for. That's it. And they derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. And whenever the government becomes destructive to those rights, it is the right of the people to abolish or alter it, and institute a new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such a form that it shall seem most likely to affect the safety and happiness. Now listen to that. You can't just abolish. People who are crying, burn the whole thing down, the whole thing's broken, you can't just do that. No, you have a right to alter or abolish. But you also must constitute a new government, laying its foundations on the principles and organizing its powers in such a way that the new government will secure those rights that were given to the people by God. And you can't just do it for anything. Prudence indeed would dictate that the government's long established shouldn't be changed for light and transient causes. Accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind is more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing that which they are accustomed to. So wait. If you want to abolish it, then you have to change it, and you have to lay its foundations on things that would secure more rights. But you can't do it for light things, transient causes, popular. Populism would not be a reason to abolish our government. But you have to understand that people are more likely just to suffer abuses than to do something radical. So it's a balance in the end. That's the whole quintessential American story. That's it. That's it. That's the American idea. There's nothing, I was going to say more grand than that, but there's nothing less grand than that. But the problem is the rights. I gave a speech on Friday, and I asked an audience of about 700 people, who can name the first five rights in the Bill of Rights? Two hands went up. Now, my wife later pointed out she thought more hands would go up, but they were afraid that you would call on them, which I did. But only two hands went up, and they were right. Can you name the first five? How can we possibly save a government? How can we possibly save our culture if we don't know what rights we do have? Currently, we confuse our rights. We confuse our right to not be offended. You don't have that right. You're going to be offended. Now we're talking about the right to bear arms. These are the rights of nature's God and nature's law. I can walk into a bear cave and I can go try to cuddle the little grizzly bear. And if Mama Grizzly Bear tears me apart, not a single person within the sound of my voice is going to shed a tear for me. Not one. Why? Because the bear has a right to defend itself and its young. That's a natural right. Now, if that bear comes into my home, nobody is going to... Well, I can't say the same because people will say the bears have a right to your home and all kinds of crazy nonsense. But anybody with common sense will not have a problem with me shooting the bear in my home because I have a right to protect myself from the big bad grizzly bear. A natural right. Where we've gone wrong is now trying to figure out what right and how far does that right go? We're now talking about how to reduce mass shooting deaths. Experts say these laws could help. Here are the laws. An assault weapons ban. How does that help exactly?
Amazing. It's the one they've actually tried and has already shown in study after study to not be effective.
A full ban on guns did not reduce murders in Australia or in Great Britain. In fact, in Australia, they went up. Gun-related murders. Hello?
I mean, it's amazing, and that's more than they ever asked for even here. I mean, what they have for automatic weapons here is more than they've ever even asked for, at least publicly.
No, that's not exactly true, because I was talking to a friend who was who's very liberal, and I scared the crap out of him, because he was like, you know, Glenn, you know, we just have to... I mean, there's only so many guns you could have. You know, we just have to... You know, there's crazy people own a lot of guns. And I said, really? What's a lot of guns? I mean, you know, 5 or 6 guns. And I said, oh, really? Because I've got a lot more than that. And he said, he just looked at me like, what? I said, yeah, I've got a lot more than that. Yeah, but you don't have those semi-automatics. And I said, all guns that I own are semi-automatics. I even own 2 fully automatic guns. What? Yeah. Yeah. A lot of them. Does that make me a danger?
Well, I don't
But I know you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really...
Whenever
what it comes
you get down
to
where the Jews, you know, where you can make the argument that some Germans made for Jews. Yeah, well, this is my Jew. I know this Jew. The rest of them are bad, but this one is okay. You're in trouble territory. Yeah, well, Glenn, I know Glenn, so he's not a problem, but everybody else... Who are you to decide?
It seems like everybody who knew this Vegas guy didn't think he was capable of this either.
You know, and it's weird. What? The Vegas guy. First of all, is there any way, anything you could have done to stop him? He had the motive. We don't know what it was.
Well, he didn't have a motive. It doesn't seem, at least yet. I mean, that
he had to have had some motive. I mean, even if it was crazy and he thought that they were all space invaders, he had some motive.
Just to entertain himself, perhaps?
It may have been. I don't know what it was, but he had motive. He had the means. I mean, he was a millionaire. I don't understand why he had bump stocks when, as a millionaire, you can go buy a fully automatic weapon.
It's very difficult, right?
I mean, it's very difficult.
You, I mean, legitimately do have... 2 fully automatic weapons.
And it will make you sweat every time you even come close to them because you're like, am I violating the law on this one? I mean, it's they're so highly restricted.
And you're one of like 0.01% of Americans who actually have them. Most of them are just like gun dealers at this point,
yes.
right?
Yes.
And you can't buy, and none of them have been manufactured after 1986.
Yeah, so they're all you know, historic guns. Mm-hmm. And like, I couldn't hand it to you. I'd be violating the law if I handed it to you.
Really?
If you held
it. If I touched it.
If I handed it to you and say, hey, would you just bring this to the car? I think both of us might go to prison. I'm pretty sure I would, at least.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's highly, highly regulated. And that may be the only reason why he didn't buy them. But there's nothing you could have done. I mean, the people that last week said, you know, we got to get rid of these guns. I know, because they don't have any guns in London, and they never have a problem at concerts in London. Yeah. Or in France.
Right. Or festivals, right?
Yeah, or in Sweden.
Nice. Or Norway.
Yeah, that's what I meant, Norway.
The worst mass shooting of all time happened in Norway.
They have no guns.
And no guns there.
Zero.
Yeah. I mean, think of the combination of how you're going to try to stop this guy. First of all, he's wealthy. So normally there'd be a person who might not be able to afford all these extra weapons and all the crazy things that he did, but he passed that one. He's seemingly smart, an intelligent guy who was able to complicated mathematics. He's not just some moron who's going to screw it up. He was meticulous. They were talking about how he brought up these 10 suitcases of weapons. He was doing them and waiting. He would bring up two suitcases, then wait 8 hours for the staff to change over so they wouldn't notice him bringing up multiple suitcases. Again, very difficult. Someone who's not meticulous could be caught. He was very private. If a person was on social media all the time, it wouldn't work. I mean, all of these things that go on, and you can't solve all of these things.
And even if you took away his guns, he still would have a bomb, or he still would mm-hmm. have a truck. If you travel for business, you know that it is a game of wins and losses. Opening the overhead bin and finding your room for your carry-on, that's a win. Miss up your wake-up call, that's a loss. Buying your next business trip with Upside.com, that's a huge win. Upside has the absolute best available prices for flights, hotel, and rental cars, and Upside will reward you with a gift card to places like Amazon.com every time you buy a business trip. Upside has an amazing 6-star treatment from customer service specialists who they call navigators. One recent Upside customer was called away for an emergency meeting, had to miss his wife's birthday, so a navigator sent her flowers and tried to help ease the disappointment. They take a personal view of you as a business person. Upside Navigators, instantly accessible 24/7 by voice, chat, email, or message on the Upside app. Do it now. Upside.com. Use the promo code Beck. Get a minimum $100 gift card from Amazon.com. It is Upside.com. Promo code Beck. Upside.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
The protests around the country on Columbus Day are just insane. Yes, greed does kill. It does kill. And it did in Columbus's day, and it kills today. What are we doing about it? Let's talk about the things that are happening today and make a difference on what really matters today.
Glenn Beck.
Whether you have a couple of guns and a lot of your wife's purses, like me, or you have a lot of guns, like Glenn, you need a Liberty Safe. Liberty Safe is the best safe on the market. There's no question about that. And they continue to amaze with their ability to not only make great safes, but make them really easy to get. LibertySafe.com right now, you can buy a Liberty Safe at a great price and receive 12 months interest-free payments with zero down and 0% APR. So they're giving you now Liberty Safes at $20 a month. $20 a month for a Liberty Safe is an amazing value. There's nothing like owning a Liberty Safe, peace of mind, lifetime warranty, and in-home delivery service that is unmatched in the industry. I got mine installed right in my home. You can do that as well. They have 12 months interest-free payments for as low as $20 a month on approved credit. You know, you're going to have valuables in your life you want to protect. Liberty Safe is how you do it. Every home has those valuables. Go to LibertySafe.com right now. Home of the best built safes on the planet, LibertySafe.com. It's LibertySafe.com.